Hello, everyone. I am so glad to have you back. Welcome to our third session of the Love Summit today. And today, the wonderful David G. is coming back to talk with me about compassionate communication for more peace, love, and joy. And I hope you had a chance to listen in this morning to the Love panel that was on at 10 Central Time. And Dick Schwartz was here the session before. And I hope you had a chance to hear that session because Dick is the founder of IFS, Internal Family Systems Therapy. And he's one of the main teachers in all that I do. Excuse me. So remember that your free pass gives you the access to all of the replays for 24 hours. And you can find those replays and your free gifts at lovesummit2014.com/schedule. And on that same page, if you want to scroll down, you can order the Silver Pass, which is your chance to keep all of the recordings and the transcripts forever. And I know I'm going to keep mine, and I'm going to highlight them and refer back to them all year because the speakers are sharing amazing information. And the Gold Pass, which we'll talk a little bit about today, you can find at the top of that schedule page. There's a link to the Gold Pass, which outlines a 7-week class that I'm going to be offering next month, so you can put into practice everything that we're learning on the summit and beyond. So back to Dick's session with me for just a moment, because if you didn't hear it, I'd love for you to have a chance and go listen to it, because it was a prototype of one you could use for yourself or with someone you love. Because we talked about the walls that we build around our heart to protect ourselves from being hurt, and actually he worked with me, so I got to work with the master of IFS, and he did some counseling with me and with 1,000 of my closest friends listening in, so it was very interesting. But he helps me understand how our walls work, why they're there, and how we transform it. And we went in and helped my inner child. I connected to my spiritual source and became more self-led, which means I'm more compassionate with myself so that I can continue to share and be compassionate with others. And Dick reminds us that you are the one you've been waiting for. And again, the more you can understand that and take care of yourself and all your parts, the more loving you can be. So if you're a therapist, a coach, or just anyone interested in personal growth and being more self-loving to your parts from your highest self, please go back and listen to the You Are the One You've Been Waiting For session with Dick and me. So now I get to continue the conversation about coming from your highest self and speaking for and with your parts. And joining me today to help me do that in a way that brings forth a way of compassionate communication in all of your relationships, even when it's challenging. I'm so grateful to welcome back today David G.
Thank you so much, Linda. It's such an honor to be here with you and to be part of the Love Summit 2014. And thank you for making this a reality for so many thousands around the world to connect to that more compassionate, forgiving, loving, and peaceful aspect of themselves. My name is David G. I'm the author of Secrets of Meditation, and it's my honor to have the opportunity to spend some time with the creator of the Love Summit and find out how she has channeled the universe's love, and shared that with so many people in so many real and practical ways, whether that's teaching others to meditate, whether that's teaching couples to mediate, whether that's teaching people to have deeper relationships with themselves and with others. And she's truly a master of this, and that's the only reason that I wanted to be involved, because I believe she's really got something special to share, and there's a beautiful value that she adds to this conversation. Linda Kroll is a therapist, she's a mediator, an attorney, and a Chopra certified Vedic master. She's a teacher of meditation, yoga, and perfect health Ayurvedic lifestyle teachings. She's the founder of Compassionate Communication, Inc., and for over 20 years, she has counseled thousands of individuals, couples, and groups to share compassionate communication for better relationships. She also provides compassionate mediation for a self-led divorce. Her core message is love is the answer, starting with loving yourself, That's capital S-E-L-F. And she helps you foster more compassionate, empathetic, accepting, and forgiving flow and interactions with the world. When we do this, we create heart-centered connections in all areas of our lives. And we could always use a few more heart-centered connections. Linda, of course, is the proud mother of Dana and Kimmy and Kevin and the ecstatic grandmother, or Baba, of the perfect Oliver, Tommy, and Macy. And welcome to welcome to your love summit that you created, Linda Kroll.
Well, it's a co-creation, but thank you, and thank you for taking over the role of interviewer of me so that we can have a dialogue. I'm so thrilled it's you, and I'm so grateful to you for doing this.
Well, it's my honor and my pleasure. But let's, before we get into anything, how did you come up with this concept, and how did you, you know, what did you have a dream one night, and how did you come to create the Love Summit?
I'm not sure when the first dream came, but part of it was when you and I did a workshop in Chicago last year, an Infinity and a separate day, and we couldn't accommodate all the people that wanted to come. And in the past, I've given workshops at Infinity and other places, and it's hard to get people in the same place at the same time. Ellen Katz and I started Inner Balance, and we'd give free workshops, heart-centered connections or guided meditations. And to get people on the same night in the same place is very difficult. So I always dreamed of a way that we could connect with people all over the world and kind of stayed open to how that might happen. And I took some online courses myself and decided I'd like to learn how to do that. So I guess when the student was ready, the teacher arrived, and I studied with Brenda Norman for the last year, learning all the skills that are necessary to put the internet piece in place, which I'm still learning, and partnered up with Carrie Sharpshire, who is the left brain behind this enterprise, to actually manifest it into the world. And then it's just divine guidance, because it's putting one foot in front of the other, never quite sure how it was going to happen. And then you said yes, and Sark said yes, and so many of the other wonderful teachers and leaders said yes, that I know it's a co-creation. So I'm so grateful.
It's beautiful. You know, you're so diverse, and you've got, you know, you're spinning about, you know, 20 plates simultaneously. How do you put all your different roles into what you do on a daily basis?
Well, I think the core message, like you said, is I'd like people to experience more of what it feels like to have a connection where you're really coming from your heart, where we drop out of judgment and blame and self-criticism and really connect. And in the 20 years that I've been doing individual counseling and couples counseling, I could see that based on the teachers that I was studying with, I could create a quilt of different techniques that actually helped a lot of people move into a new state of relation to each other. But I'm getting up there. I'm going to be 67 in May. And I thought, as much as I love my clients, doing one-on-one counseling, since my practice gratefully was full, wasn't going to allow me to reach as many people. So I thought I'd do groups online and combine the left brain of the legal information all the way to the right brain of the spiritual awakening that I got from the Chopra Center and the IFS and everything else that I've done, and just put it all together and help people learn how to be more loving to themselves and others. That's the goal.
It's well, you do an amazing, really an amazing job. And I don't know what 67 years old is, but you have the verve of a teenager and the energy of a 20-year-old. So whatever you're doing, keep doing it.
Well, you mentioned it on your radio show the other day about living your dharma, and it just feels like connecting with people the way that I've been able to do is really part of it, and sharing love and teaching people how to be more loving with themselves first is part of it. So,
remember the power of your ripple, because you are rippling out there.
And we're all rippling together. There's thousands of us rippling all over the world together in this moment, and it's a miracle.
How cool is that?
It's so cool. It's so cool.
Yeah. So I know that you have studied, you know, a lot of heart healing techniques, and I know that you've, you know, explored a lot of different dimensions of that. But maybe you could share with listeners, you know, this concept of compassionate communication. What actually is that?
Well, I think compassionate communication for me is really this heart-centered communication where you really can open your heart and care about the other person's experience as well as your own and not diminish your own because you're caring too much about others, but really stay centered in that space of love. And there's a lot of different kinds of compassionate communication. IFS teaches, internal family system teaches how to be more self-led. Mindfulness meditation teaches compassionate communication. The Chopra Center and you teach higher consciousness and coming from that place of peace. Marshall Rosenberg in nonviolent communication talks about compassionate communication. So it's not really in the name, but the way I teach it is where you really take a moment and you go inside and you give yourself the time and compassion to heal the burdens from your past, to then let go of any limiting beliefs that are keeping you constricted, to connect to whatever your spiritual source is, and then relate to yourself and each other and the others in your life from your highest and best self. So unburdening the pain from the past, letting go of limiting beliefs, connecting to your spiritual source, and relating from your best self in a heart-centered way.
And is this what sort of like differentiates what you teach from all these other, it seems like really what you're teaching is sort of like a facet of all these different things to allow for an even greater expansion. And you know how I feel about meditation as being, you know, such a core aspect, because when we can quiet ourselves down, we can hear the whispers of our heart. And when we don't quiet ourselves down, we're in that activity and everything, then it's just all about the intellect. So how does your, you know, your teaching differentiate itself from all those other types that you mentioned?
Well, before I get into the mechanics of it, I think what I'd like to do is turn to everybody in the listening audience or replay audience and just ask them a question, and maybe by experience I can show them rather than just talking at it. So I'd like everybody to take a deep breath. Me too. And then I'm going to ask a question, and the answer is going to be from 1 to 10. And 10 is, I wholly agree, I totally agree with you, and 1 is, I don't believe it at all. And what I'd like you to say to yourself right now are 3 words. Ready? Just everybody say it to yourself. It's, I am divine. Just think it to yourself. I am divine. And on a scale of 1 to 10, with 10 being, I know that, Linda, it's, you know, who I am, to, I can't even believe you're asking the question, is 1, just put your number down. So if we could take a poll, I don't know how many, there might on this call be a lot of 10s, actually. I think a lot of people that are tuned in to the leaders and the teachers that are on this call already know on some level that they're divine. But anything that's less than a 10 is because of something you're telling yourself. So you're telling yourself you're not good enough, you're not there yet, you're not special enough, your relationship's not good, you're not earning enough money. There's something you're telling yourself. But at your core, you're a 10. And I think what happens in what I teach people is that they come to see me in my office, and it's either an individual or a couple. So I'm inviting the individuals out there or the couples out there to kind of pretend you're coming into my office and just saying hi and bringing in whatever it is that's bothering you. And often what's bothering them is they don't know how to communicate because they've gotten into a rut. And what I do is I talk to each one individually, and I ask them a few questions. And one of the first questions I ask is, what's the problem? You know, and then they will usually tell me what the other person is doing wrong. He, she is never, always, whatever the problem is. And then I ask them, well, when that happens, how do you react? And they either react by getting angry or they react by getting distant. And I'm looking to see how they show up in the relationship. How do they communicate before they learn compassionate communication? And then I ask each one, and it usually is within a 5-minute time frame, tell me a little bit about your family of origin. So everybody now just take a breath and just think about your family of origin. What was your mother like? What was your father like? where were you in the sibling hierarchy, oldest, youngest, middle? And were there any events in your family that affected your life? Was there any addiction? Was there a divorce? Was there an affair? Was there a secret? Was there a trauma? And then after I find that out from both couples or one person, I invite them back into the room together, and I go to my board and I talk about self and parts. So I'm going to take a breath for a minute and just catch you up and see how that, is that making sense, David G?
Yes.
Okay, great. Because when I'm talking about compassion and coming from your highest self, I'm talking about coming from that divine essence that you are, that as you know and teach us, when we meditate and get in between the thoughts that restrict us or constrict us, we are that essence of God, the universe, the highest self, the oneness. And it's that aspect of you, that self, capital S, capital E, capital L, F, that is what I'm trying to help people learn. So I go to the board. I have a little easel. And on the easel, I have a diagram. And I fortunately just talked to Dick Schwartz about this right before this call. And he gave a great explanation of internal family system and parts. And I'll give you my two-minute blurb. But first, I want to take a break and see how you're doing. How are you doing?
Doing great.
Okay, good. All right, so pretend you're in my office. And hello, everybody. I wish you could be, but this is an office long distance. So you came in my office, and you've got somebody in mind. In fact, pick somebody in mind, whether it's your spouse, whether it's your child, whether it's someone you work with. Pick someone that you're having trouble compassionately communicating with, and you'd like to learn how to do it. So what I do is I give everybody my two-minute blurb, and I can get it in less than that. So here it goes. Okay. I believe we all have a healthy self, capital S self. And when we're in self, we're calm, we're clear, and we're compassionate. You know those moments? You know
sure.
those moments, David G? Right.
Yeah.
But we're not always in self. We're in different parts. And I have three columns on the board. On the left are the exiles, the middle are the managers, and the right are the extreme parts. And those exiles are those parts that we learned in childhood weren't going to get our needs met. So if we felt sad or scared or hurt or vulnerable in our childhood, we pushed that aside. We didn't want to feel that. Some of us pushed aside our anger, too, because it wasn't safe to be angry. But this is the ultimate, what about me? Who's going to love and care for me the way I need? So we exile those feelings, we push them aside, and we go out in the world and we manage. And a lot of us manage by being nice and pleasing and caretaking. Some people manage by being hardworking or judgmental. Some people are mean. But most people, many people put on what I'm going to call a pseudo-self, little s self, where you look like you're calm and clear and you're compassionate, but you're really feeling a lot of those sad, scared, hurt, angry feelings underneath. So what happens when you can't manage the feelings of the exiles, a lot of people act out in extreme ways. And the different ways people act out when they're extreme is they eat too much, or they drink too much, or they work too much, or they get addicted to exercise or shopping, they get depressed, they go have an affair, sometimes they decide they want to have a divorce. But many times they put up walls. They put up walls around their heart that said, I'm not going to let you in. So then I go to the board, and I draw two little squares to represent castles. And I let each person know that if I could draw, they would look like castles, but they don't. So in the dungeon of afraid of each person are the exiles hiding. So you hide your fear, your sadness. The managers stand guard at your castle, making sure there's no entry. And if there is, out come the extreme parts fighting with each other. And the only way for safety to happen is for self to be present. And my job is to help people get to self.
So walk us through that analogy again, because that's the crux of it. That's brilliant. Start with the exiles again.
Well, actually, I'll give an example of my own. I have two wonderful parents. My dad is no longer with us, but he was manic depressive, and we didn't know that. So he used to yell a lot when I was younger. And when he yelled a lot, it told me that I didn't want to be angry. So I learned to exile my anger and learned how to be very nice and pleasing, and Dick did some work with that just the hour before. And then if I was feeling angry but wasn't letting myself know it, I might go eat some chocolate, or I might have some physical symptoms that left me with a chronic illness for a while. But there were ways that I wasn't really being authentic because my family of origin, I had picked up some messages that had limited me. So when you get into a relationship and you don't have access to parts of you because you've exiled them, then you find a way to manage that in some ways can be codependent. The need to please, the need to be liked, the need to take care of, but you're not really being authentic. And then you wonder, why aren't your needs being met? And that's because you haven't asked for them. So in terms of a lot of couples that come in, a lot of times there's been a wife whose father wasn't present as much as she wanted him to be as a child. So she exiled those feelings of abandonment. And as a child, she thought that maybe someday her prince will come, and not only will he take care of her, but he'll read her mind and do so. And then, of course, when she marries another human being, he doesn't do that, and so she's disappointed, and she deals with her disappointment by putting up a wall. And then he comes in wondering why she doesn't want to be sexual with him, or she's always depressed, and I have to help them understand each other, each other's family of origins, and to have compassion for themselves and each other so that they can communicate from their hearts. So to give an example, when you think right now of somebody who you're having a problem with, if you think of somebody that you're having a problem with, and you notice what it does to your body, where you constrict, then just take a breath and give yourself permission to go to that place in your stomach or your chest or your jaw and just acknowledge that you know the feeling. And later on, if there's time, I'm going to do a little meditation to help people get to self and really experience what that's like. So getting to self by unburdening your parts is one way. That's the internal family systems. And then when you came to Chicago and you were talking about meditation and you were talking about that place of calm and peace and grace and joy, I thought, ah, that's the other way. Just find a way to let go of all those limiting beliefs and just hang out in that spaciousness between your thoughts. So that's a very long answer to a short question. I'm sorry about
no,
that.
No. That's brilliant. You know, that's really what happens. You know, so many people, when I'm trying to, like, you know, tell them, if you can just meditate for a few minutes a day, you'll start to feel that shift. And, you know, the common response is, you know, we're a nation of multitaskers. We're a generation of, you know, doers and hard work and putting in effort. And people are like, you know, well, what else do I have to do? What else do I have to do? So after they just sit and do nothing for 10 minutes, they figure out, well, I've got to do more in some way. But truly, it's just by settling down. It's by giving yourself, you know, just a few minutes of yourself. And I often say, you know, if you can't hang out with yourself for 10 minutes, why in the world would anyone else want to?
Right. Right.
You know, you and I have talked a lot about, you know, a lot of different healing aspects, and we've talked about, you know, compassion and different ways of connecting and seeing the world. What is the miracle of empathy?
The miracle of empathy is something I teach people to do when they've gotten in touch with their higher self. And the meditation allows them the experience of feeling what it's like when your parts aren't leading. So when you do that, you recognize that even though there's a part of you that's walled and there's a part of you that's angry and there's a part of you that's resentful, underneath it's usually because you're really hurt or sad or scared about something. And there's a cartoon that I've got in my free gift, and I think I mentioned it earlier, but I'll mention it again. There is a picture of one person in an empty conference room, with one person on the podium, and the banner at the back of the empty conference room says Convention of Children from Functional Families. And of course there's only one person, because we do our best, but everybody comes from some dysfunction. whether something's going on in their life. Even perfect families sometimes create the dynamic of needing to be perfect, which, of course, is a heavy burden to bear. And just a little funny story, sideways, when we were giving our talks last year, and I was up in front of the group, and I was saying that when we are constricted, when we have burdens, when we have limiting beliefs, guess where they come from? And somebody at the back of the room said, your parents. And I said, right. And I looked to see who it was. Do you remember who it was? It was my daughter.
Your daughter. Well, you taught her well.
My daughter. Yes, I did. I taught her, to be honest.
As David Simon used to say, we all are extensions from the original dysfunctional family, Adam and Eve. So,
okay.
You know, we're all carrying that genetic code.
Exactly. So we do our best, but we all come into relationships with our wounds. And if we aren't in self enough to learn how to speak our truth, then what we do is we build walls and we don't really listen to the other person. We are speaking at them. We are criticizing them. We are blaming them. We are judging them. We are taking all the real or assumed injuries that they have heaped upon us, and they are bricks in the wall that we've built around our heart. And it's very hard sometimes to put that wall down because we're afraid that if we do, we're going to be as vulnerable as we did when we were children. So what the miracle of empathy does is allow us to listen from a place of that higher self, compassionate consciousness, in a way that we can hear the other person, we can understand them, even if we don't agree, and we can reflect back that we feel for them, that we're sorry if we've hurt them. Sometimes we're sorry even if we didn't do anything, we're just sorry that that's their experience, not in a patronizing way, but in a really compassionate way. And just getting that empathy from your partner allows your wall to soften so that you can give them empathy back too. So I have a handout that I give people in my office, and it's really just the steps would be this. The steps would be learning how to be in your higher self, whether it's meditating or unburdening, and we'll talk more about unburdening, and then telling your partner that you'd like to talk to them about something and is now a good time. And I always tell people to ask if it's a good time, because if you're not in self, and you're in a part that's anxious or worried or preoccupied, you're not really going to give your partner empathy. So ask, is it a good time? And then the person that has something to say, who I'll call A, has to tell their partner, when something happens or happened, I felt hurt, sad, scared. Go to those exiles. And people usually don't go to those exiles. They don't speak for their inner child. Instead, they go into their heads, and they want to say, when something happens, you were this, and you did this, and it's your fault, and the other party is listening from a place of defensiveness. So if you use an I message and speak for those exiled feelings of hurt and sadness and fear, then the other party can listen, which is what they're going to do. So they listen and get the words. They understand by reflecting back that they really do understand your perspective. And the third part is to really say, I'm sorry. I don't want you to feel that way. I want to create a new relationship in which you don't feel sad or scared or hurt. And I'm sorry. And then the first person says, go ahead.
And that is indeed a miracle. Because,
it's a miracle.
Because, you know, you can say, you know, I'm not forgiving you. You can respond in a million different ways. But when someone is that vulnerable and they're willing to say how they feel, you know, and suddenly open up in that dialogue, miracles happen. You know,
exactly.
I was estranged from my dad for many years. And, you know, ultimately we got to that place where we both were willing to be totally vulnerable. And, you know, for the past decade, he's been my best friend, and we talk every day. And that has, you know, if we weren't willing to just be that, oh, it's so funny, he's beeping in my ear right now. He's calling me.
Miracle of miracles.
We call it synchronicity.
Exactly.
So, you know, when we're willing to be that, so many times people think that vulnerability is a sign of weakness. It's the ultimate sign of strength. When you can peel the armor away and totally hold your heart out there, and know that and trust in the universe, then it doesn't even matter what comes back. You know, there's a merging that's beyond words, that's beyond, you know, conversation. There's a beautiful union that happens. And, you know, I think you hit it right on the head. It's really, you know, it starts with that. And additionally, Marshall Rosenberg, Dr. Marshall Rosenberg, also teaches you always have to, you know, go with a request rather than a demand. You know, if you storm into a room and say, okay, I need to talk, it instantly pushes people back up against the wall. But if you, like you said, you know, say, is now a good time? Could we talk right now? It's the first thing we learn when we come out of the womb. We learn to say please. And so if we can always phrase our questions to the person that we're just about to interact with as a request rather than a demand, the world shifts. And people are a lot more open when you're willing to ask them if they have a moment rather than imposing your moment on their moment.
Exactly. And the other part is to consider the I message. And the I message is really about your deepest feelings. It's really about the feelings of that inner child that was hurt or sad or scared. You're really learning how to take care of your inner child. And I did that with Dick in the session before. So if people are listening and they haven't heard the session with Dick Schwartz, there's a great example of how to love your inner child and connect to your higher self. But in the meantime, when you're speaking for that part of you, you're showing up with a lot more presence that is non-judgmental and non-accusatory. And you have to watch when you're using the I message, because I feel that you already is a thought. You hear that? I feel that is a thought. So really stick with the hurt and sad and scared. And the Rajas yesterday were talking about really getting into a dyad and looking at your partner and asking them, what is your grievance? Asking them, what would you like me to do more of? Asking them with looking in their eye. So it's really learning how to be present to your partner in a way that gives them the attention and affection and appreciation that the needs of the heart are that you talk about. And to do it in a way that roots, like you said, there's a difference between compassion and empathy. I think they're very close, but you said yesterday that compassion is when you root for the other person's success, when you're rooting for their pain to end. And when you're holding yourself at a 10, when you're coming from this higher self and higher consciousness and loving heart-centered place, you recognize that, you know, as we've learned, we're spiritual beings having a human experience, and we're all doing the best we can. Sam Keen, I think I've quoted him before, is we come to love not by finding a perfect person, but by learning to see another imperfect person perfectly. And that's what we're trying to do with our partners. And those walls, those are the barriers to love. We build them to protect ourselves. We have filters that we see our partners through, and we keep looking through the same filters, which, of course, keep us stuck in the past or projecting in the future. And if we meditate, we stay in the present so that we have a witnessing present moment awareness. But when we've got those walls up, they restrict us from the love and joy we could feel. And to quote Rumi about the barriers, is your task is not to seek for love, but merely to seek and find all the barriers within yourself that you have built against it. So if anyone listening is thinking about a grievance, a resentment, an anger that they're having towards someone, just be gentle with the wall that you've built in your heart. It's trying to protect you. And often what I have people do is invite their protectors to tea. So I have them imagine that they have a little conference room or tea room, and they invite the parts of them that are judging their partner or angry or resentful or withholding or sarcastic, and just invite those parts to just sit around the table and be there, separate from the self that is beauty and love and higher consciousness. And as you turn in the direction of your protective parts and ask them what they're afraid of if they calm down, if you weren't so sarcastic or withholding or resentful, what are they afraid would happen? And they're usually afraid that if they don't take over for you, you're going to be that hurt little child, and you're going to be lost in pain in this relationship. And the more you meditate, and the more you unburden the pain from your past and recognize that you are this 10, you are this divine being of light and love, you are divinely protected, and not only that, your partner is too, no matter what they're showing you. Underneath it is their divine essence. And it's from that higher level of consciousness, perspective, self-leadership, that you can really co-create a loving relationship that creates miracles daily.
Right. Yeah. And it's very important what you said in terms of, you know, what's a feeling. It's very different than a thought. And when you say, I feel that, or I feel as if, those are just thoughts. They're not really feelings. We have to prod ourselves to go even deeper. How do you feel? Even to the point of identifying the space in your body, you know, where is that emptiness or that fear or that scaredness or that irritation? What is the thing or the loneliness or the anger? Where, you know, where is it? And then that's a feeling. Once you start getting into, you know, more than one word, it's a thought.
Exactly. And if you don't go into your body to check it out and be with yourself, then your body will end up with symptoms. All those things
right.
that meditation helps with, the constrictions and the disease
right.
and the symptomology. But I believe that everything is energy. And when we're little, I believe we're all a light, basically. Allowing myself to say it so loudly on this telesummit has been a gift. But I believe we're all born a light, like a light bulb. And if you imagine yourself as a little baby, as this light, then what happens is things happen to cover that light. So if you take black cloth and you put your parents' stuff or your siblings' stuff or your peers or your teachers or your boyfriends or girlfriends, you look down and you don't see that light anymore. And instead you look outside yourself for the light, possessions, positions, money, any external way of nurturing yourself. But when you take the time to unburden the burdens, to really go back to where the pain was and remember that you're no longer that child or that teen or that young bride or that young groom, that you are this 10, that you are this divine essence, that you are this self, then you recognize you don't need to protect yourself the same way because you can set appropriate boundaries. You can ask for what you want and need. You can leave if the relationship isn't safe or meeting your needs, but you don't have to be afraid. So instead of coming from fear, you come from love all the time.
Right. Yeah, beautiful. It's beautiful. You know, we all have these needs, and I talk about the needs of the heart, you know.
Right.
Attention, affection, appreciation, and acceptance. But you have created sort of like a blueprint to have a higher likelihood of having those needs met, as well as, you know, so many of our other desires and wants. So, you know, maybe you could share your five steps to get what you want or to get what you need.
Well, both the miracle of empathy and the five steps are what I'm teaching in the 7-week course that we'll be talking about. But the five steps to get your needs met are easy ones to name. They're just harder to do. The first step is to know what you want and need. And unfortunately, many people have lost sight of that because they've spent their lifetime trying to take care of other people or worried what people thought of them or being who they thought they should be, and they've forgotten. So the soul questions, who am I, what do I want, what's my purpose, and then letting the universe work out the details. But just beginning to ask the questions, what do I really want and need? And sometimes it means going back to when you were a child, when you were really that unfettered and unlimited and unconditioned joy and remembering what it is you want and need. So the first one is to know what you want and need. The second one, which is harder for some people, is to know you deserve it. And that's where, excuse me, that's where doing some unburdening comes. Where are you taking in the critical messages of your parents or your spouse or things that you're telling yourself just to make yourself more perfect? So how do you unburden that and really hold yourself at that 10 and know you deserve to have everything that you want and need? The third one is learning how to ask for it, you know, not making it a demand. And when you know what you want and need and you're really grounded in your deservability, the asking just becomes a part of the giving and receiving of the seven spiritual laws. You're just back in the flow. You ask, someone can say no, but at least you put it out there, which many people have stopped doing in their relationships, by the way. So know what you want and need, know you deserve it, learn how to ask for it, and the fourth is to be willing to receive it.
You mentioned a process for people to go through to practice
yes.
this.
All of these are part of the program where you learn how to receive, and then the fifth step is to stay grateful. So knowing it, deserving it, asking for it, receiving it, and staying grateful. And then when you practice
right,
that with the miracle of empathy, what were you saying?
Well, I was saying, you know, it's very, very important that you provide, you know, real world, actionable next steps, because otherwise it's just theoretical, you know. And
exactly.
A lot of people are like, you know, yes, I wish I could be more compassionate, but I don't know how. I wish I could express myself, but I don't know how. I wish I could, you know, get serious about this thing, but I don't know how. And so, that's really the, you know, the thing that I think you really provide, that's so valuable is taking the theory into practice. So we can talk about that later. You know, go into a little greater depth about the concept of walls and filters.
Well, I think that a lot of people don't realize that instead of truly being present, when you meditate, you get more present. So putting IFS together with meditation, with being in your higher self, your inner wise self, your inner wisdom, whatever we're going to call self, when you do that, you recognize that in the present moment, everything is as it should be. And you're not stuck in the past and you're not moving into the future. But when you've got your walls up, it's really as if you have bricks built around your heart. And a lot of times when I work with couples, they'll tell me what those bricks are, that he didn't ask me to marry him the way I'd like him to have asked me to marry him, or when we started having children, he was working too much and I felt abandoned, or when her mother came to visit, she spent too much time with her parents instead of noticing me. And it goes back decades. And they've told themselves
and they've been holding on to it, and they've been holding on to it for 20 years.
Exactly, exactly. And the problem is, their partner's never been empathetic about it. They've either apologized but didn't really understand why they were apologizing, or they said it's in the past, just forget about it. So it's not that you have to go back and re-bring up everything that ever happened, but you do have to allow yourself to talk about your feelings and invite empathy, even if your partner's not willing to. And if your partner's not willing to, give it to yourself. So acknowledge how much you've been through, acknowledge what you've learned from it, and love yourself totally so that you're, as Sark says, a full cup of love sharing your overflow with the world. So fill yourself up with that love. And when you do, you won't need the walls, because you realize that what the walls are doing, they're trying to protect you. But at the same time that they're protecting you from any real or imagined onslaught, they're also constricting you from being the full-hearted, loving person that you are. So it all comes down on some level to self-love, compassion, and, of course, forgiveness. And that's a biggie. Because sometimes I'll ask my clients, you know, if I could wave a magic wand, and I sure wish I had one, but if I could wave a magic wand, and from this moment on, you could forgive yourself and each other, would you do it? And a lot of them don't even know they have that opportunity. But there is an opportunity at any moment to start over. Back to my children again, whom I love dearly. We used to have this policy when they were younger that no matter how strained the relationship was or what argument we were in, if either anyone wanted to start over, we'd reboot. And there'd be some times where they'd come to me crying, you know, can we start over? And, yeah, we can, because if anyone is in self, if anyone is coming from this place of love and compassion, it creates the field of possibility for something new to happen in that moment. And you just have to breathe your way into that possibility. And it happens. So when you have the walls that are down, or are willing to take off your filters or change your filters and look at your partner, your child, your coworker, your friend, your mother or your father, through a lens that says, I'm here, I'm open, I'm present, I'm loving, I'm compassionate, I'm non-judgmental. It changes everything.
Yeah, it really does. You know, one thing I do want to stress to the listeners is, you know, I've experienced, you know, hundreds of different teachers of heart opening and spirit and love and peace and many, many Buddhist teachers of mine. But I think that you have a, you know, you have such a real world appreciation for our humanity. You know, realistically, we all want to be loved. We all want to love others. But, you know, we get caught up in our own little dream, as Dandi Garu always said. We get caught up in our own story. And we get caught up in our own needs. And we're really not paying attention to the fact that other people also just want to be loved and just want to share love. And then that's when we can be harsh and we can be vindictive and we can shut people down and we can withdraw. You know, talk about, you know, the difficulty that, you know, the realistic difficulty that people have in staying loving. Because, you know, it's so obvious. Well, we all want to be loving, but, you know, even when you could be saying, you could be whispering to yourself, I want to be loving, I want to be loving, and yet you're saying, you're sticking a mean word in there. You're trying to be right. You're trying to punish the person for their comment as well as explain what you're talking about. And, so maybe you could go into, you know, a little more explanation. When is it hard to be loving, and how do you stay loving?
Well, it's often hard to be loving when something is coming at you that feels like it's violating your boundaries or your space. So the first thing is learning how to ask for what you want and need in a way that allows the other person to at least know what your intentions are. When you can give yourself that empathy and give them that empathy, then you can change the dynamics. But there are some times when you need even more help, and I see a lot of clients like that. One is when there's been an affair, and the walls that have been built, you know, are truly protective. And the Rajas were talking yesterday about how, you know, you can reboot after affair and you can forgive, but it takes time. Understanding that, again, we're human beings having a spiritual beings having a human experience, but some of the aspects of our humanity include sometimes mental illness, sometimes addiction, sometimes even something like ADD or HSP. There's a lot of clients that come to me that don't realize that ADD, adult attention deficit disorder, is really something that one of them has that's imposed such a burden on the non-ADD partner that there's a lot of resentment that's built up. But when they're curious, which is a self-led quality, and compassionate, and learn about the limitations that ADD sometimes creates in people, and you can accommodate it once you've been honest about it. I mentioned HSPs, too, which are highly sensitive people. I didn't learn about that until very recently. Elaine Aron does a lot of work with highly sensitive people. And I've had couples where when I've mentioned that one of them, it's often the wife, but it might be the husband as well, might be HSP, a highly sensitive person who likes to be alone more often, who needs more alone time, who has to take more space and more quiet. It's not a personality problem. It's just an aspect of who they are. So rather than judging what's ever in your way, if you can really be curious and compassionate about it, you can find a way to bridge that gap and create a relationship that transcends what the individual differences are. Ariel Ford was talking about wabi-sabi love and finding the perfection in imperfection. But acknowledging that it is difficult and asking for what you want and need, including empathy, and asking for how you want love given to you is important. Because a lot of times a man would like a hug and the woman's made dinner but forgets to get the hug. Or the woman would like the man to come home and spend time and he's out earning money for the family, so he thinks he's giving her currency and vice versa. So really getting to a place where you can communicate about everything, where you can communicate about money and sex and children and extended family and what you're going to do with free time and just everything possible. Once you learn how to communicate, everything else gets easier. So I don't know if that answered the question, but.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's brilliant. It's brilliant. You know, I wish we could talk for like 3 hours.
I know. Oh, I'll tell you one story about the ADD, though. A couple came to me, and they were getting divorced, and the woman complained that every day she went to the garage, he left the garage door open. And if he loved her, he would have remembered to close the garage door. And I felt so sad for them both because she had already made up her mind. And had she been able to see it from a higher perspective, and, you know, Wayne Dyer says when we change the way we look at something, what we look at changes, and be grateful that her husband was off to work and he just didn't mean to leave the garage door open, just that simple act of acceptance might have changed the whole thing. That's probably not the whole reason they got divorced, but just that being unaware that if you hold your partner as a 10 and act as if they are doing the best they know how to do and partner with them compassionately in a way that invites them to join you in a loving, compassionate space, that does pave the way for that miracle to happen. But it starts with you,
right.
And it starts with loving yourself enough to do that.
Right. So how do I stop myself in the moment, though? How do I, you know, suddenly I'm about to give a zinger, you know, and I'm about to, somehow, either punish the person, by speaking in a mean tone or speaking harshly or by proving them wrong. And how do I stop myself in that moment, though? How do I reel myself back? Because that's not how I want to be, but it's
right.
Just bubbling up and I want to get, you know, I want to get my point in, or I want to get revenge, or I want to be right.
The more you do meditation and the more you unburden the pain from your past, you have an awareness that the part of you that wants to lash out is really a protective part. It's not who you are. It's just a part of you. And it's there defensively. It's there to protect you. And it's protecting you because on some level you're hurt. So if you know that, it takes practice, but sometimes it can just happen in a moment. If you know that, instead of lashing out, you go directly to the part of you that's hurt. You grab that inner little girl or little boy, and you keep her safe. And then you speak for her rather than from the anger. You thank the anger for trying to protect you. And there's ways to do that and put it in a room and dialogue with it and get to know it better and help it unburden. There's all ways to do that. But the short answer is you thank the part of you that's trying to run interference. You take a breath and you let your parts know that you're here, that divine 10 higher self you is here. And you speak for your exile, which is, this hurts, or I can't be here now, or this scares me. And it may not shift, it may not stop the other person, but you're more in self. And if what you do is exactly what you did before, and you give them the zinger, but you take a moment and you just notice that you're doing it, the witness part of you is more in self. You're at least conscious now. Oops, here I go again. The next phase is you stop yourself, right? First of all, it comes out, and then you stop yourself. When you're really getting more self, you apologize. I said it. I'm sorry. That's not what I mean. I can't talk to you now. I'm too angry. And you leave. And then eventually you recognize that you can speak for a part of you which says, you know what? What you just said made me angry. Not coming from that anger, but made me angry. And it's making me angry because you do it all. When you do it, I really feel hurt. And here's what I would like. A, B, C, D. And it works.
So, you know, we've talked a lot about, you know, communicating, compassionately communicating with people who are, you know, we're actively engaged in a relationship. But how can people communicate with compassion when their relationship is ending? So many people say to me, I'm at the point where, you know, we're getting divorced, but we can't talk about anything now. You know, I hate him. He hates me. And, you know, so what's your guidance to communicate when, you know, how do we stay in that compassionate mode and slowly, you know, allow the layers to come away, especially if we're cohabiting? You know,
great
a lot of
question.
People, you know, they decide to, they decide to get divorced, and, you know, they're staying in the house together for 6 months, and one of them is in the guest bedroom, and they pass, like, shifts in the night, you know, occasionally eating together. They're obviously, you know, trying to figure out what their next step in life is. But how do they stay in that space of compassion?
Well, when they come to see me, and let's say they're both in that state of anger and resentment and aggression and reaction, they come in, and within the first 20 minutes, they get myself in parts a 2-minute blurb. And they're probably thinking, why am we doing this? You know, we came for a divorce. But I teach them how to communicate compassionately, because if they don't, then I will either be refereeing their parts or they'll hire attorneys to act out their extreme parts for them. So when they first come, the first thing they learn is how to communicate from self. And the meditation I'm going to do in just a few moments is going to show you the experience of what it feels like when you are coming from a more compassionate place for yourself. So they're learning to be compassionate for themselves, that divorce is hard. And what they're going to do is learn a method that I call compassionate mediation. And compassionate mediation is a way of dialoguing where you come from your highest self and you talk about what a relationship would look like if it ends. So if you're going to separate, or if you're going to get a legal separation, or if you're going to get a divorce, and from their higher self, they talk about some of the situations and issues that they haven't talked about for years. Because if you get a divorce, you have to talk about dividing the assets, how to parent, all, what are you going to do about the house, who's going to do what chore. So if they take that same awareness and compassion and revisit their property, how they would pay for bills, and how they're going to parent, and do it in a way that's really self-led, there are many people who come to me that create a new marriage. Because I tell them that when they come to me for a divorce, let's assume the first marriage is over. Let's not try to save this because for whatever reason it's not working. But let's act as if, because they can, start something new. What do you need? What does the other party need? What are you willing to give? And is there a way that you can co-create something new at the same time that you're talking about what an exit might look like? But in that conversation, which is compassionate, they co-create a new beginning for their family that isn't antagonistic, that isn't court-led. And what they end up doing then is, if they do get divorced, it's what I'm calling a self-led divorce. And it comes from a space where they recognize that they did come together for a reason. Their children are certainly the reasons, but there could be other reasons that they learn from each other. And that there's a way to gratefully and graciously dissolve their union without collateral damage to their children, their extended family, or their life. And they do it by learning how to compassionately communicate. And they
so
do it with a... Go ahead.
No, finish.
No, go ahead. What were you going to say?
Well, I was going to say, what is compassionate mediation, since that's really what you do? You know, if we assume that, you know, that 50% of couples, you know, don't stay together, and there's either, you know, court trying to work it out at home, or the concept of mediation, which so many of my friends have gone through, the process of mediation. And some mediations have been, you know, not great. I'm a believer in win-win, and there's a lot of, you know, mediators and mediations where it's not a win-win. It's, you know, it's what's worse than a win-win is a win-lose, and what's even worse than that is a lose-lose.
Right.
So maybe you could talk about compassionate mediations, if you are an expert in that.
Again, it's when people come to see me, and I'm hoping not only to make it a wider availability, but to teach other therapists and mediators and attorneys and coaches how to do it as well, because, again, there is a process to it, and that process is first teaching people how to come from their higher self, how to heal their own wounds, and how to see the other party from a higher level of consciousness where, again, we're not in that fight, flight, freeze mode, but we're really looking at it from, okay, we're two people who have come together and we're going to try to resolve it in the highest good for all concerned. And by doing the meditation, which we do in the office, just a 2-minute one, and by really healing themselves they have compassion for the other person, even if it's to hear about the other person's family of origin and why they end up being the way they are, they do get a deeper acknowledgement and a more compassionate way of witnessing the other person's reactivity that allows them then to come to a meeting of the minds without their walls in place, without their guard up, without their slings and arrows, like you said, out. And it really shifts the whole dynamic.
Powerful. I know that's not being done. I have a friend right now who's going through mediation, and I know that's not being done in their divorce because, you know, they live together, they drive there in separate cars, they leave in separate cars, and, you know, neither of them feel like they're really getting their needs met. So
right. I'm hoping compassionate mediate. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah. No, you're the answer. That's, you know.
Compassionate mediation someday will be covered by insurance. You know, that it will be covered as a therapeutic modality for transitioning a relationship in a way that meets the needs of all concerned and, of course, cuts down on stress and ulcers and psychological problems later on. So let's put that out to the universe.
Yes, let's do that. You know, ultimately, you know, you should hopefully, if you have lawyers, lawyers, judges, and mediators as part of this process because, you know, sharing that wave of awakenedness can shift the entire process. And that can change generations of hatred and anger and turn that back into love.
So that's the hope.
Let's take this a little deeper. You know, you talk about parts and you talk about the self. What's a self-led divorce?
Where you are able to listen with kindness and understanding to the other party's fears and pain, where you can acknowledge that you understand their perspective and you can, from your highest self, speak for what you want and need in a way that's respectful, and then kind of join together highest self to highest self. So I think what I'll do now, and I know you're going to have to go soon, so I'm going to do this kind of quickly, but if I can, I want to do the meditation that I do for everybody. Because you've just set up a paradigm where you have two people that are really angry at each other, and hopefully most of you in the audience aren't in that situation. But again, go back to thinking about someone that you're having a grievance with, that's making you upset, that's caused you pain. And again, just go into your body and see where in your body you're feeling constricted, you're feeling tight, you're feeling your back or your neck or your jaw or your hands tighten. Just notice your body and notice how constricted. So this will take a little less than 2 minutes, but let's just get the experience of this, and then I'll let you go and everybody else can too. But put your hands on your abdomen and then breathe so that your abdomen goes out. So you expand into a deep breath that goes all the way down to your belly, to your core. And then release, breath out, belly in. So inhale, belly goes out. Exhale, belly button back to your spine. Inhale, belly button out. Exhale, belly button back to your spine. Good. Now just breathe naturally. And the reason I ask you to do that is because when you breathe deeply like that into your abdomen, the air goes all the way down and you can oxygenate and be present. And it brings more peace and space in your chest around your heart. So just bring more self in. And now let your breathing become normal. And as you do, as you're sitting there and your feet touch the ground, imagine that your feet are growing roots to the center of the earth. And as those roots go deeper and wider, you're going to begin to feel very firmly rooted and planted and grounded, like a tree or a mountain, so that whatever swirls around you isn't going to take you off your foundation. And then you're going to invite that nurturing energy from the earth to come up your feet, shins, your knees, your thighs, your hips, your groin, your stomach, your chest, and into and around your heart with all the feelings that are there. And then allow that nurturing energy to go up through your throat, your jaw, your forehead, to the crown of your head, and then out the crown of your head, all the way to the sky. And then invite down from the sky, nature, higher power, universe, God, what's ever out there for you. Invite down some energy that's very calm and very compassionate. And then breathe even bigger than yourself so that you surround yourself with this calm, compassionate energy that I'm going to call the energy of yourself. And then focus that compassion inward and start at the top of your head and scan your body to the soles of your feet and just notice. Notice where you're feeling any tension or tightness. Notice your thoughts. Notice your feelings. And as you notice these parts, let these parts notice you being supported and surrounded by this calm, compassionate energy of self. And then if you would, imagine yourself going through a doorway into a beautiful scene in nature. The air is perfect, the sun is shining, and you see before you a path that you safely walk to the base of a mountain. And what you're going to do for just a few moments is to separate from your parts and go up the mountain in self. So ask any part that's judging this other person if it'll separate. Ask any parts that are walled or sarcastic or defensive or withholding if they'll separate. Ask the parts that are trying to control the other person or change the other person if they'll separate. Ask the parts that are worried about what's going to happen next or your children or an outcome or an agenda. Ask all those thinking parts to separate. Ask the parts that are afraid or worried to separate. And even ask the parts that are hurt and sad if they'll separate too for just a few moments while you go up in self as high up the mountain as you want, all the way to the top if you want. And if you're thinking any thought or feeling any feeling, it's just a part from which you can separate for just a few moments. And wherever you decide to stop on that mountain, just rest. You may be aware of another presence. You may not. Either way is fine. And if you want, you can put your thumb and forefinger together to anchor this place as a place to come back to. Because in just a few moments, you're going to go back down the mountain to collect your parts. But before you do, in your mind's eye, picture that other person at the top of their mountain without all of their parts attached. And as much as you can, send compassion in their direction. So in just a few seconds, you're going to go back down the mountain to collect your parts. Even if there's a part of you that doesn't want to, because you're going to realize that once you give your own parts the attention they need to unburden the pain from the past, they carry their own wisdom and light. So taking back your parts ever so gently, come back down the mountain, back down the path, back through the doorway, and back to your room. So when people come to me for a divorce, that's often part of the first session. And then I send them home and ask them to be as kind as they can to each other and to come back so we can figure out how to keep things safe as they learn how to be compassionate with themselves and each other. And if we need to talk about a part, which we often do, because when you're talking about a divorce, it's kind of a parts, all the parts come out. And we learn how to do that. And then if I need to let them download a part that just needs to express, I'll often ask the other party to leave the room. And eventually they can talk for their parts to each other. And it really does make a difference. So that's compassionate communication. Whether it's compassionate mediation or just learning how to talk to anybody that you love. And if there is a divorce, it's a self-led divorce. But it all comes from love. And it starts with loving yourself. So thank you for asking. And that briefly is what my program is about, the Gold Pass, which is off the LoveSummit2014.com site. If you go to the Gold Pass, you'll see the 7-week program that I'm offering after this program that is 7 weeks to have compassion for yourself, compassion for your partner, to change the way you think about things, to be more loving and accepting, to speak your truth, to be in touch with your intuition, and to know at your core that you are this higher self, this divine essence, this 10, and that's how you live your life. So that's part of what's available.
You know, for me, that's the clincher. It's taking that time over those weeks with, you know, a guide such as yourself to keep people engaged in the process and to allow that unfolding. I know you have some kind of lure to get people there. Is there some type of free gift?
Oh, the free gift comes anyway. The free gift is everybody's. And what that is, it's love notes. And in it, I've got lists for it because the Love Summit is igniting passion, connection, and fun. So in the book, The Love Notes, you're going to find ways to ignite passion. And I think the first two things on the list is forgive your partner and forgive yourself. I probably reverse that. Forgive yourself and forgive your partner. All of a sudden, the passion comes back. It's amazing when your walls are no longer there. I've got lists on how to have more fun and to feel more connected. There's a Valentine to myself that I'm sharing that I'd like everybody to read from their selves. I wrote it 2 years ago, and it just is a way of recognizing and loving yourself appropriately. So that's in there, and a love note to your inner child. So that's for everyone. And the Gold Pass is available this week. Hopefully people will take us up on that. And otherwise, learning how to be compassionately communicating is part of what everybody's teaching this weekend, which is why I'm so thrilled that everybody could join us, because I think everybody on this call, the Rajas I met for the first time to invite them, but everybody else has been a teacher of mine and has kind of co-created the ability to kind of put the summit together and do this.
Co-created you.
Co-created me, exactly. Well, we co-create each other. You know, we're all love, and we're all bouncing around in this matrix of love, and the more we each can ignite that love in ourselves and be that channel of love, we're igniting the world. So that's the plan. That's the plan.
Well, thank you so much.
Thank you for
really pulling this all together, for really connecting, you know, 20 different teachers of all different, you know, walks. And you're the fuel and the threat, and that's a beautiful place to be. And I'm honored to be a part of it. And you're such a brilliant teacher, and I'm sure everybody is going to take away some real value for many, many years to come. Just even from this small conversation.
Ah, thank you, and thank you for being such a major light in this world for so many and for me. And I love you dearly, and I know you have to go. I'm going to stay on and say goodbye, but I know you have to leave. So thank you for being here, and thank you for everything.
Thank you. Namaste. Remember, we transform
Namaste.
The world by transforming ourselves.
Exactly. And the light in me and the light in you recognizes the light in everybody listening, and we're all the same light, and we're all the same love. So bless you, David G., and bless everybody. Thanks for being here. Bye-bye. And for those of you who are staying on, I just have a couple more things I'd like to say. I'm so grateful David G. was here. We had a very mellow conversation. I think if my daughters had been on the phone, you would have heard a little different conversation. I think we teach what we need to learn, and my daughters would mention that I've got a lot of parts outstanding, and the thing that we didn't talk about with David G., but I want to add before we leave, is laughter and humor and self-awareness and self-acceptance, because I've got many parts, as we all do, that could use some improvement, and my daughters, my family, my mother, my brother, all my family, they love me in spite of all those parts. And the difference is I'm learning to love me in spite of all those parts and kind of not be afraid to show them to the world in a bigger way. So we stayed a lot in my head today, offering some of the thoughts as a therapist, mediator, and attorney, as another human being with the same parts that we all have. I invite you to take a look at the booklet, the Love Notes, because there is lists of how to be more fun in your life, how to add passion and connection in your life. I've shared some of my journal entries that I don't share before because I'm ready to be seen in all the vulnerability and humanity. And I encourage you to do the same, that this Valentine's weekend begins a love affair that you have with yourself. that you are the one you've been looking for, that all of our parts are well-meaning, that the parts of our partners are well-meaning. We don't need our walls. We can come with light. We can come with love. And we can even come with laughter, both at ourselves and just the human condition. And what we're going to do at 4 o'clock Central Time, which is very soon, is Mary Ellen Devine is going to come back, and she's actually going to do some EFT with us. So any of those residual walls or filters or limiting beliefs that we'd like to let go of, she's going to help us with. And whether we unburden with IFS, whether we meditate and get to our deepest spiritual self, whether we take a deep breath and we reboot and start over at any moment, remember that at our core, we are this self, we are this light, we are the love that we are looking for, and the more we offer it to ourselves and each other, the happier we'll be. So thanks to David G. for being here with me. Thanks to all of you for being here. Come on back soon. This is such a gift to be able to share this time and space with you. Bye-bye for now. See you soon.